What a guy, ladies and gentlemen. What a guy. Jim Puppy is in the studio with us. Jim, good to have you back on News and Views. How you been? Hold on. Slide that doggone microphone over there right to you. There you go.
Okay, there we are. Thank you.
It is, you know, I've been talking about this book, Dakota Attitude, because, well, first off, I love it. I know so many towns in North Dakota that I instantly think of a town. Well, at our front desk, Peggy Hoyer lived for a long time right by Washburn. The first thing she did was check out Washburn.
And she knew both of the people I interviewed in Washburn.
Exactly. Yeah.
Also in Manador.
That's Esther Murtis, right? In Manador.
Correct.
And Esther knows a lot about Manador. Mm-hmm. She does. So what made you decide to go to every small town, sit down? I mean, that had to be very time consuming.
It did take a lot of time, but my career was working at the Veterans Administration. I worked with veterans who were wounded, disabled. And I also worked with the former prisoners of war, and that was an impetus for me to know that what unsung heroes were. Okay. They went through a lot, but didn't complain at all. And so I knew there were unsung heroes in North Dakota. And like someone said, we know more about the soil than what we know about the people. So I was going to go out there, and I was going to change that. I wanted to interview somebody from every town in North Dakota. You know, the big towns get all the notoriety, it seems, but there's a lot of unsung heroes, people in the small communities that have great memories and wisdoms and wisdom that they can share. And I was out there to get those stories.
It had to be, great to do, even though as much time as what you put in, it had to be just fun.
It was just wonderful. Going to these small towns, I would approach somebody locally and ask them who in that town they respect, somebody of good human character, somebody with integrity. And, it was amazing. They would refer me to somebody, and they were the right choice. It just seemed like just immediately we became friends or we had the same background. I told them I was a native of North Dakota, and that really seemed to help.
Where was home for you?
Home was at Hensel, North Dakota.
Where's Hensel?
Hensel's in Pima County, northeastern part of North Dakota. I was born and raised on the farm, 6 miles from there, went to country school. And so I had the language of the people as well, because, I didn't live during the era when horses were used, but, my parents talked about the horses and neighbors and things, so I kind of had the language and understood, what it was somewhat like during the generation ahead of me.
How many towns could you get done in a day? Or was it a town in a day?
I think my maximum was about four towns in one day. And that's exhausting. You have to be a good listener. And I wasn't a very good listener. And one of the incidents that happened is I had my script. I was going down the questions, and those were the ones I wanted to stick to. And I wasn't listening too carefully. And then this one person I was interviewing said, "Jim, you're interrupting me." And that was one of the greatest things that happened, because I knew that he felt I was not listening. So when I went to the places after that, I had no script. I followed what they wanted to tell me. And that was very rewarding. And I think we got the best stories that way.
You know, your next book should be about small town motels. Because I'd be willing to bet you stayed in one or two.
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
I had a 20-year-old van, and I had a sleeping bag in the van.
Okay.
And a loaf of bread with homemade strawberry rhubarb jam and peanut butter, and that's what I existed on. If I ran out of coffee, I'd go to the local elevator where the guys were, and there was always a pot of coffee, and, of course, you'd offer to purchase some of the coffee. But, no, I did not eat in restaurants either.
So how long from start to finish?
I retired from the Veterans Administration in 2004, and I completed the interviewing process in 2018. So between 2018 and 19, we edited the book, and then in December of 2019, it was published. And we're on our seventh printing at this time.
Think about that. I mean, think about that. Your seventh printing. I mean, you know, and I can tell you if it's up to me, there's going to be more because these are Christmas gifts. These are the perfect Christmas gift for that family member. And you know, and I know there's a lot of North Dakotans that have moved to other states, to other places for their career, and North Dakota is still home. And so to get this book, it's like getting a piece of your past sent to you.
You know, that's true, Joel. You know, there's an old German saying, home is where you were rocked in the cradle. And so a lot of people that are purchasing the book, they were born, raised in North Dakota, and then they left. And, of course, their heart is still in those small towns in North Dakota. They remember the basketball games, the Class B, the Class C. They remember the 4-H. They remember the country school that they attended and their favorite teachers and where the playgrounds were. And it's just amazing. That's very rewarding for me to be able to get them hooked back home to where they were raised.
How many towns were you surprised by? And by that, I mean, you may not even have recognized it by name, but somebody said, you know, that's a town. There might be 3-4 people there, but that's a town.
Well, that's true. Even less than 3 or 4 people. One of the towns that had nobody in the town, but it was listed on the official North Dakota state road map, and that was my standard that I used.
Okay.
In fact, I went through this town, and I didn't know I went through it, but it was on the map. So I had to locate somebody who previously lived in that area. And so it did involve some travel, even out of North Dakota, to find somebody that used to live in that community.
How about the differences in how those towns lived their lives? For example, Red River Valley, grain farmers. The further west you get, you've got cattle. You know, you've got cowboys even further west than that. I mean, how the differences. North Dakota geographically is a big state, and I get around to all of it and have been. And yet, you know, in the northern tier, you've got Icelanders. In the southern tier, you've got Norwegians. You've got, I mean, just the differences in the state itself. I'm curious what your thoughts were.
Well, I think, you know, there's a commonality amongst the people of North Dakota. A lot of the towns were small, but yet they were viable. They had their schools. They had their general stores. And I think many of the experiences were the same. Yes, eastern North Dakota, it was more densely populated than the west. But many of them had much the same experiences, although western North Dakota was more sparsely, of course, and they had to travel more distance. But still, the closeness, the comfort, you know, really weren't there, you know, years ago. But the contentment, I think, was common amongst these people.
Jim Puppy is our guest. He's the author of Dakota Attitude, where he went to every community, every town in North Dakota, and interviewed someone and had them tell Jim about their town and about what that town was and how it became. The name of that town, that had to be part of the process. I know reading the book as I have, you hear about the name. I know how Matador, for example, my mm-hmm. hometown, got that name. What about the other towns out there?
Basically, I felt that there was information out there. There's historical data relative to these small towns. What I was primarily interested in was the voice of the people. What were they about? Because the other information could always be obtained through some history books or, you know, documentation or whatever. But I wanted to preserve the stories, the memories of the people who lived there, what it was like growing up. And so that was my focus.
I know that in some of these communities, you grabbed more than one interview. What was the decision process there?
Well, like I said earlier, that I would just drive into town and ask in that community somebody that was local who they respected, somebody of good human character, somebody with integrity. And so that's what I focused on. And they would take me to this person or couple, And they would introduce me to them. And most of the interviews took place at the kitchen table over many cups of coffee and some homemade pastries, homemade bread, cookies, so on. Yeah.
What about ethnicity? I know I asked you this earlier, but, you know, in terms of earlier in the show, we were talking about language. We were talking about how my dad understood German because his grandma, who played a major role in his being brought up. I mean, he was one of 11 kids, the oldest of 11 kids. And so as a young boy, quite frankly, you know, out, you know, it wasn't like he was kicked out of the house. That was just the norm, you know. And so the language, you know, great-grandma wasn't someone who was going to let him speak German because he was an American. How about the brogue, the language, those type of things?
Well, yeah, I interviewed Lawrence Welk's niece, and she had a brogue. So interesting to me. And she says, you know, this love, she says that the young people don't know about love anymore. They don't know what it's like, you know, the old-time love. And she said, you know, my husband, no matter what, I loved him, and I always wanted to be around him. In fact, the Monday after she was, well, she got married on a Saturday, and on Monday, she says, we went out and picked rocks. It don't make no difference as long as I was with my husband. Same thing, this same lady, Lydia, after they were married, they lived with his parents. And they were upstairs of the house, and the only thing they had was a bed and a dresser. But it was hot, 100 hot, she says. But, you know, it didn't make any difference as long as I was with my husband. And, of course, other places, some of the Norwegians, they never learned English until they got to school. And they had a little conflict with that, but you know, younger persons can learn the language much faster. I think of a German in school, he was, you see, the instructor or the teacher, young teacher, had flashcards. And there was a picture of a dog on there, and he was supposed to say what it was. And he looked at it, and he says, Hund. Of course, that's German for dog. And the rest of the classroom all laughed. He says, I never volunteered after that.
Interesting. Really interesting. I'm curious about the transition for some of these towns, the role that the interstate played and some of the major highways that went through that some people didn't have the good fortune of being part of. So Jim Puppy, author of Dakota Attitude. I'm just having a blast, so I'm not going to let him go. Jim Puppy is our guest. We're talking about Dakota Attitude, ladies and gentlemen, a work of love that he put together in regards to visiting every town in the state of North Dakota and getting a story based upon that town. Jim, as these towns transitioned, in some cases they grew, in some cases, and most cases they didn't. What role did people talk about when it came to the railroad and the highways in terms of what happened to their town in the end?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, they're hurt about it. And, you know, in a sense that they have lost the community as it was when they were younger. And you see the vacant buildings. You see the storefronts closed, the schools closed. A lot of the schools, the newer schools, were built in the 50s and the 60s. If it rained one day outside, it rained 3 days inside because insulation drips of the school because it's closed. And I also think that, you know, these people that were educated in these small towns, now they live elsewhere, you know, in the country. And they bring all these wonderful virtues that they grew up with. And so they're a little town, North Dakota, all over the U.S. And that's comforting to me because, you know, I certainly appreciate the background that I went through. As far as, yeah, it's difficult. With the good roads, like you said, you know, going out of town, most people are shopping in, you know, in the larger cities, and it's just difficult in their mind, yes. But now they're used to it. So
it's a perfect example to me, and Wapton's doing just fine because they work so hard at it. But you don't see the stores that you used to see in Wapton, because when you live where I live, 30 miles out, you'd go to Wapton for all your school supplies and all your clothes and appliances and all of those things. Now you hop on the interstate and you're, 55 minutes to an hour away from Fargo. Mm-hmm. And so your town changes based upon a highway, like an interstate. And so it's, to me, those things have such a huge factor. Why nurses? Why nursing students? Why did you say, you know what? This latest edition that we send out, I know I only have about 30, 40 seconds, but why nurses as a group you wanted to give money to?
Well, I've been around the medical field for, many, many years. In fact, when I went to college, I worked in hospitals and I drove ambulance. And in college, worked at nursing homes. Also worked at the Veterans Administration for all these years. And I have a special spot in my heart for the nurses. The extensive amount of hard work, their caring, and the comfort that they do provide people in a nursing setting or in a hospital, or mm-hmm. very, very important to us.
Where do they find it? Where do they get it? The book.
The book is available through multiple bookstores in North Dakota and also online through NDSU.
If you're the fifth caller, we're going to mail it to you. Don't worry about whether you got to pick it up. If you're the fifth caller, we'll get the book to you. 1-800-880-5346. Good riding with you, folks.